Okay, thank you. We're back on the record. Mr. Telligan is continuing his examination of Mr. Heacock.
Thanks. Just one more question on this line we've been talking about, Mr. Heacock. Do you know how much fill is being put into buffers with this project? Oh, I think you're muted, sir.
There we go.
There we
Okay.
go.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Do you know how much fill is being put into wetland buffers with this project?
Well, I think the report does discuss the wetland fill or impacts, to the wetlands themselves. But I don't recall that the temporary impacts were part of that discussion as well.
Okay. Let's move on and let's talk about wetland P2.
Okay.
I'm back in your report here. And this is the figure on page 5 of Exhibit F28, the staff report. You see here is wetland P2, category 2, and it points out this wetland right here. Yes.
Yes.
Now that wetland was identified as a category 2 in Exhibit F5. That's the 2007 Radke report. Did you review that report?
Yes.
Okay. It was identified as a category 2 in Radke's 2018 report. It was identified as a category 2, as far as I can tell, in every document that Ecological Land Services submitted to you with this project, correct? And that would include their April 22nd, 2022 report, their September 7th, 2022 report. During your permit review process, did ELS or anybody else suggest to you that P2, wetland P2, was anything other than a category 2 wetland requiring a 200-foot buffer?
No.
Okay. Have you been asked to evaluate any more recent studies determining that wetland P2 is some other category of wetland?
There is a revised report, but I have not reviewed that.
Okay, has any, to your knowledge, has any county staff reviewed that revised report?
I don't know.
You don't know. So, no, has any decision been made saying that yes, it is some other category?
No decision would be made unless there's an associated, permit that would go with that.
Okay. Do you know how the 200-foot buffer for wetland P2 was determined?
As I recall from the Radke report, that the 200-foot buffer was just considered a extension of the associated wetland to the west, the larger wetland to the west, and for purposes of being more, I think, more conservative in relation to the wetland itself, that they felt it just made sense to incorporate that in the 200-foot, in its associated 200-foot buffer.
Is that something you read in one of the Radke reports?
I think that there was something in relation to that. That was my understanding.
When I read the Radke report, they said that P2 was included in L2, the wetland to the west.
Yeah, I think they just included it, even though it is a separate wetland.
Even though it is a separate wetland. So you're saying even though it is a separate wetland, that's the county's position?
Well, if you'd like me to explain how we actually reviewed this component, I can do that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So, if you'll look at the associated roadway, that roadway design has not changed since 2009. That roadway has been the case
Well, hold on. Hold on. I'm sorry. I thought you said you were going to explain something about how you categorize P2.
I'm not talking about categorizing P2.
Never mind.
What was vested in the review?
Okay.
For the 2009 was our
sir. I was asking you a question about P2. You said if you'd like me to explain, I said yes. I was not inviting you to go on to a different topic. I'd like to stay on P2.
Sure.
Do you have anything to add about explaining your review of P2?
I just tried to do that, but.
Oh, I thought you just told me that what you were saying didn't have anything to do with P2.
Does have something to do with P2. It's proximity. It's assumed a 200-foot wetland buffer, but this component of the project has always been this component of the project. The roadway has not changed. This is part of what was vested in the 2009 application for this roadway to be here. For that roadway to be there, it's always been there. It's not moved. It's not getting closer or farther from the wetland. It's always been right there. So that's that. That I didn't do a good job of explaining that in the wetland report. In the critical area buffer reduction report.
You did do a good job explaining that.
No, I did a terrible job of explaining that.
Okay. Do you know if P2 is fed by groundwater or surface water?
I don't know.
Okay. Do you know if the roadway will interfere with groundwater or surface water going into P2?
Groundwater impacts are not something that we review.
Okay. Now I want to go back to a page I showed you earlier. This was part of the development agreement, which is Exhibit F8.
Uh-huh.
And I showed you the buffer averaging rules.
Yep.
And you'll see factor 3 says width averaging will not adversely affect the wetland. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So in order to receive a buffer averaging approval, you have to prove that the buffer averaging will not have an adverse impact on the wetland, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Now I'd like to go to your report. And down here you have buffer averaging and you begin to go through the various criteria. And then right here in your report, this is page 13, you have a heading titled "Width averaging will not adversely impact the wetland." Do you see that? So I'd just like to trip through this with you and ask you questions about your analysis.
Sure.
It says, first sentence, phase 5 was designed to utilize upland that is outside the buffers of wetland L2, L3, P2, and 12 to avoid adverse impacts to this wetland. That's not true of the road, correct? Because the road is actually being proposed within the buffer of P2.
Correct.
Okay. And then it says, however, reductions in temporary impacts are necessary along the entire length of this phase and are spread out into smaller areas. Does that statement say or imply that there will be no adverse impacts?
Of course.
How so?
That those impacts are temporary in nature. They'll be fully replanted. They'll be made sure that they are maintained and replanted if there's failures and irrigations required, you know, all sorts of things. These are all part of what's required in a mitigation plan.
So that refers to temporary. I'm talking about also the reductions.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So what about this statement tells me as the reader or informs you as the drafter that the reduction of the P2 buffer to accommodate the road will not have an adverse effect.
Those particular impacts are part of, I'd say they're part of the original analysis, you know, in this particular case. The roadway has always been there. Right.
So is that what you meant? So when you wrote reductions in temporary impacts are necessary on the entire length of this phase, you meant this was already approved.
But essentially, yeah, that these impacts had previously been approved. Yeah.
Okay. How about the next sentence? It says this allows for smaller reductions in several locations rather than larger reductions in one or two locations, which reduces the potential for adverse impacts. You would agree with me that reducing the potential does not mean there won't be any, correct?
Reducing the impact doesn't mean there will not be impacts. Right. Typically in a mitigation plan review, we review and make sure that those impacts are reduced to the extent practicable, and that, you know, the replanting plan itself and the mitigation plan and the density of the plantings and the fact that they're going to be restored to meet that qualification of a wetland buffer is the whole crux of the review.
Mm. The next sentence says temporarily impacted buffer areas are located near or next to the areas where buffer will be subtracted. So there will be improvement of buffer functions that will avoid adverse impacts to wetlands. Is it your opinion that the temporary impacts you described will actually result in an improvement of buffer functions?
Well, I think that I explained earlier that the mitigation plan has a restoration plan that well exceeds what is currently on the ground there. You know, you'll look at plant types and species planted and diversity and that type of thing. You know, many of these areas are monocrop Douglas fir trees with minimal understory. So the replanting itself, the replanting and the mitigation requirement of the replanting, it is going to be an enhancement of species diversity, story development from shrub layer to larger shrubs, and then associated trees. That's the whole crux of the replanting plan is to meet or exceed what's out there now.
Okay, so the buffer functions will be improved.
Yes.
And that includes the buffer for P2.
Well, yeah, sure.
Do you know what's in the buffer with P2 now?
I think it's mostly a stand of Douglas fir, some salmonberry below as well. We did review this area a couple of different field visits. We had Neil Molstead with Department of Ecology out there two different times. We had Fish and Wildlife out there. We had the tribes out there with us as well. So, we did review these areas. I don't specifically recall this one spot, to be honest. But as I recall, it's predominantly an understory of salmonberry and an overstory essentially of Douglas fir, and Douglas fir and maybe some cedar, western red cedar.
I see. And those are all mature trees?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Well, they're not fully mature.
Sure. I mean, they could. Yeah. Do you know when the area was last logged?
I think in the 80s, I believe. I'm not 100% on when. Most of the stand is about 30 years old, as I recall. Uh-huh. So I'm not sure what that math is, but.
Okay. I'm going to jump down a bit. This last sentence says runoff generated on the existing and new impervious road surfaces will be directed to the stormwater facilities, which will reduce water quality impacts to the wetlands. Do you see that?
Uh-huh. Sure.
What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, there'll be an associated drainage system that is, you know, beneath the roadway with catch basins, sidewalks, gutters, and associated infrastructure that's going to collect the roadway runoff and direct it to stormwater ponds.
Is that true of the spine road adjacent to P2?
I believe so. I think that the spine road has associated, sidewalks and gutters, you know, and that type of thing, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And is that water directed? I know there's several stormwater ponds in this development. Does that stormwater go to those ponds?
Yeah.
Is this something you would have reviewed when you drafted this sentence?
I believe that's, you know, the whole concept is that, you know, any of the runoff that hits the roadway surfaces is going to be, you know, collected and applied to a water quality treatment area. And then, you know, obviously, slowly metered into the, you know, it with overflows and that type of thing too, right?
That it would go to a pond.
Sure.
Yeah. In this paragraph, paragraph three, is this all your independent text? I mean, did you type it up yourself?
Much of that is likely from the wetland report itself. And so we would review that and, you know, make sure that we had components of that were figured out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't write all that. I do not write all that material, all of that material.
Fair enough. Do you recall if this particular paragraph, though, you wrote it or if you copied it?
I think I copied it.
Okay. I'm going to go for a moment to the applicant's stormwater plans.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you can see here, this is wetland P2.
Uh-huh, yep.
And here's wetland L2.
Yeah.
And here is the spine road that we're reducing the buffer to in order to accommodate, correct?
Uh-huh, yep.
And then we have flow arrows from the south, they go north, and from the north, they go south.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. And those go to a catch basin 64, correct?
Looks like it, yep.
And then they go out to catch basin 63, to CB 62, and then they're discharged to the wetland, correct?
Okay, yeah, yep.
So it is not true that stormwater flowing along the spine road is going to a pond, right? It's going to be directly discharged to the wetland.
Well, it looks like there, you know, I'm not a stormwater reviewer, but I think that's going to a water quality facility and then out into the wetland itself.
And what would be the water quality facility?
Would be a you know, like a vortex type of, you know, I don't know what the water quality treatment system is or not. Typically that's what's done though. There'd be some kind of, you know, water quality treatment type of facility.
Do you know if one is proposed here?
I don't know.
Okay. Do you know what kind?
Well, I'm looking then a little further. It says proposed swale.
Mm.
So a swale is a water quality treatment facility. So the swale itself will be uptaking, you know, any effluent or nutrients or that type of thing. So that is, you know, a standard for, you know, I think the vested, you know, application has the swale. And it looks like then the swale will be the water quality treatment.
Okay. And so there's going to be a swale for water quality treatment.
It says a proposed swale, typical. Right on there. So mm-hmm. that would be your treatment facility. And I'll say that swales do a very good job of, you know, of incorporating any of the, you know, runoff and that type of thing. It's a best management practice from back in the day. Mm-hmm. We may in today's code ask for a different kind of treatment system, but seeing that it says proposed swale. So yeah.
Under today's code, you would do it differently?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a stormwater designer, nor am I this applicant stormwater designer. So I don't know.
Right. But you did offer the staff report.
Pardon me?
But you did offer the staff report, correct?
I did author the staff report, yes.
And in your conclusions as to why this particular buffer reduction would not result in adverse impacts, you talked about how there would not be any discharge to the wetlands. They'd be all be going, all the water would be going to ponds. And so I understand that might not be your expertise, but that was your decision, right?
Well, the whole point is there's water quality treatment prior to any outfall, you know, or any discharge to associated wetlands.
Right.
So, yes, there's water quality treatment here in this case.
Okay. Do you know if anybody reviewed this particular design to determine if it complied with current stormwater standards?
Why would we review for current standards when this is vested to an older design manual?
Just a simple question. Did you do it or not? Sounds like you
didn't. That would be no.
Okay. Do you know what the drainage basin is leading to the size of the drainage basin leading to CB64? Do you know what the size of it is in comparison to the size of the buffer that's being taken away?
No, I don't.
Do you know what the size of that drainage basin is that's leading to CB64?
I do not know. I don't know.
Okay.
That would be part of the drainage report. And I think I testified I don't review the drainage report. So,
okay. Was the drainage report, because I know the applicant has submitted one as exhibit R19, did they submit that to the county?
Again, I don't review the drainage reports, so that's not part of my responsibility.
Okay.
Assume that they provided a drainage report. Maybe not part of this application. It would be, you know, the other site development activity permits or the proposed early clear grade permit, you know, for phase 4, 5, 6. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Different page. So this was the that's actually, isn't it? Let me see here. Well, I guess this generally, I can use this. This was the original plans. And if you recall, the applicant was proposing an 85-foot buffer that you approved. And then they have changed their plans. And I'm just going to show you their revised plan, I believe, which was submitted as part of their response to my motion for summary judgment. This is their revised plan proposing a 100-foot buffer. You see that?
I see it. What are you referencing? I'm missing that.
Have you seen this document before?
What's it from? I don't have any idea.
Okay. This was the applicant's revised plan for the spine road that the applicant submitted in response to my motion for summary judgment. Have you seen this document before?
No, I've not seen it.
Are you prepared at all to opine as to whether or not it would comply with the county's buffer averaging rules and the other rules imposed by the hearing examiner?
I would have to review that if it's a revision. I've received no revision.
You've received no revision.
I don't have an official revision. We have no action to take in relation to a revision.
Fair enough, sir. Yeah, not trying to catch it. Fair enough.
I don't know.
I want to go back. I'm going to turn my screen sharing off. I'm going to shift gears a little bit to wetlands 302, Q1, and Q2. Do those numbers and letters ring a bell to you?
Yeah.
Okay. So these were wetlands that were identified in Radeke's 2007 report. That's Exhibit 5. They were identified as wetlands in Radeke's 2018 report. That's Exhibit F9.
Uh-huh.
I believe even in the staff report, they're shown on your diagram. And but then ELS said later that they no longer exist. Do you recall that general dynamic?
Uh-huh.
So what did you do when you were presented with the ELS report saying they no longer exist? How did you investigate that?
Well, typically when there's a re-review for wetland situations like this, we would ask that the Department of Ecology wetland specialist, and I referenced him earlier, Neil Molstad, mm-hmm. We would go out and review those particular wetlands and, you know, have a qualifying response from him. And so he's our technical specialist in relation to ratings. So we would review that out in the field. That review occurred, but I could not tell you what date that occurred, but we did have Neil out there several times. We also had the tribes and fish and wildlife out, and we did review those particular wetlands in the field.
Was that after ELS had said they no longer exist?
No, that was prior to that.
So even before ELS said those wetlands don't exist, you went out there with DOE and you physically reviewed those wetlands.
Yeah, and ELS as well.
Okay. And what did you all conclude?
That they didn't exist. There was some particular reason. One of the lineal wetlands that had previously been described had qualifications for both hydrophytic and also water regime. But it was determined that that particular wetland I'm referencing was part of a old logging donkey skid trail. And so turn of the century, the last century when logging occurred, the original logging that occurred in this area, there were substantially enormous pieces of wood that were skid up and down the along the topography. And if you've never really seen a log skidder, they are significant in size. They're mechanically able to drag, 8 to 10 foot diameter logs up and down, wherever they're dragging them to. In this particular case, there was an old railroad grade. So they would drag logs up the slope and down the slope from a significant different, up to a half a mile away sometimes. And so this particular, one of the features that I'm just recalling, of us looking, at this particular wetland was one of these, it was a large, ravine created in the ground surface itself. And so, it would be what we would call a man-made or a man-created wetland itself. And so, by the practice and the fact it didn't have significant wetland soils, associated with it as well, that particular wetland we reviewed and determined that it was not a wetland feature. It's not a natural wetland itself, but created from scouring of 8 to 10 foot diameter logs across the surface. There were significant trees here in the past.
Right. Did Ecology draft a report, and is that in the record?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that they reviewed and concurred out in the field. I do not recall that.
Mm-hmm. And so your position is that those wetlands are man-made, and so therefore they don't qualify as wetlands.
Either they're man-made or, you know, for other reasons that they didn't meet all three components of wetland classification.
Were their rating forms or delineations filled out that day?
Yeah, I believe. I don't recall.
Okay. And do you recall what year this was?
I think 2020, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, I guess, so was ecology aware of Radicke's prior identification of wetlands 302, Q1, and Q2?
I believe so.
Uh-huh. Was it determined at that meeting that Radicke got it wrong?
Well, I think for that one wetland I described, yes.
That's the long, the sort of...
The long lineal one, yeah.
Uh-huh. What about the other two?
I don't recall.
Okay. Bear with me for 1 second. Let's share my screen one more time. Getting into back into your staff report, I'm looking at page 2. This is paragraph 3, SEPA, State Environmental Policy Act.
Yep.
You said the reductions of buffers are categorized as a variance and are considered a minor land use action. And then you cite KCC 18.04, and then you cite WAC, I think it's WAC 197-11. 806E.
Correct. Yep.
What was the provision you were relying on in KCC 18.04?
18.04 is our, you know, our SEPA, essentially our SEPA rules in 18.04.
Mm-hmm. Right. But you concluded that this project is categorically exempt, correct?
Yep.
And so do you know what provision within KCC 18.04 you were relying on?
Well, KCC 0.04 also has a statement that, you know, if there's components that are review components, that we go to the WAC. And so in this particular case, we went to the WAC. And I should have labeled that WAC 197-11-800-6E, obviously. Uh-huh. But no, we reviewed per the WAC.
Okay. So the WAC is what you're relying on.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see if I can pull up that WAC.
You may have to add WAC in there to search for it if you're looking to search.
Yeah.
If you have an exhibit number, I can pull that up on the screen for you too.
I don't. I was just going to look at the code online. Thank you, though. Stop share. Do screen share, Google Chrome. So I'm looking at WAC 197-11-800.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
First of all, were you relying on the SEPA code as it exists today or as it existed back when this project vested?
It hasn't changed since then.
Okay. So let's go down to 6E. Granting a variance based on special circumstances, mm-hmm. not including economic hardship applicable to the subject property, such as size, shape, topography, location, or surroundings, and not resulting in any change in land use or density. Uh-huh. You see that? Is that the provision you relied on?
Yes.
Okay. Is it your understanding that a buffer modification is a variance?
It would be a type of variance, a type one decision. In this particular case, it's administrative in nature. So a type one decision is still a variance. You're asking for a revision, if you will, you know, from the standard. So it is it's what we've considered a variance. We processed dozens and dozens of projects, you know, using the variance criteria here, and with an assumption that that it is indeed exempt because it's a minor land use decision. If you look further up in 6 itself, see that it says land use decisions. The following land use decisions shall be exempt. And so, you know, you go then down to that variance criteria there. And that's what we're referring to in this case.
Okay. I'm going to switch back to my PDF. There it is. Let's see if I have the right page here. The old code had this section 19.100.135 labeled variances. Did you issue a variance under this section?
It is, I'll tell you that the buffer reduction permit, the critical area buffer reduction, is again an administrative review itself. So, again, you see the reference, the special circumstances, subject property, size, shape, topography, et cetera, and so forth. Is written in there. We reviewed for that, certainly, you know. Did I place it in the staff report? I don't believe I did.
So you issued a variance under section 19.100.135.
No, I issued a critical area buffer reduction under the provisions of a buffer reduction permit. We interpret the buffer reduction as a type of variance, but it's administrative in nature. So it's a type one decision. It did not require a notice of application. It didn't qualify, in our code, it doesn't say that you are required to have a notice of application. So there's no, pre-review. It's administrative in nature by itself. So that's the criteria we called out.
So do you recall at the beginning of our conversation, I asked you about the two different kinds of buffer reductions. There was buffer averaging and there was administrative buffer reductions.
Yeah.
And you said this was a buffer averaging and the latter, the administrative buffer reductions, was not something you granted. Do you recall that discussion?
Oh, I don't think I fully said that. I think I said the majority of this application was a critical area buffer reduction for buffer averaging, but I think there was one component of a buffer reduction, a 25% buffer reduction. But I cannot. It's been such a time ago. I can't recall, specifically where that is.
Okay. You don't know where you actually did a buffer reduction versus buffer averaging?
No.
Does it say in the staff report where that location would be?
It might do. Do you want to tell me if it's there or not? I mean, I
can tell you I couldn't find it.
Okay. I'm just flipping through it here real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it. Just I'm looking where it would have been in the report itself.
Okay, so despite that it's not stated in the report, your position is you still granted a variance under section 19.100.135.
Well, this would be considered a minor variance, if you will, that type of permit. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so your position is under the SEPA code. This is a variance. A buffer average is a variance.
Yeah. Well, I would believe it met that qualification. I'll further relay that that if any reduction of a buffer, we would consider it's not fully meeting the buffer. So we would require a SEPA checklist certainly, and then. In that particular aspect, we would look to that code and review it in that way. I'll also relay that the minor plat amendment, we also had an associated SEPA addendum that revisions that we reviewed here in this critical area buff reduction permit were part of the record for that associated permit that went with the clarification of north developer, south developer, and the phasing that was proposed for those two separate applicants. And that particular SEPA addendum also is part of this component too. So, it's review under that documentation. And I think that document also references that buffers would be reviewed at time of submittal of additional permits. So if that's helpful.
Okay. But in your decision, you just said that it was categorically exempt.
Yeah, that's the citing I use.
Okay. And then one last, well, I guess just two questions, and I think I'll be done. First is, to get a buffer modification, do you have to show special circumstances?
That's part of the review. There's certain circumstances that, again, as it says, due to, topography, those kinds of conditions that a variance would be, reviewed as part of those components.
Okay. So if I purchased a, very flat piece of property, okay, and there was a wetland on part of it.
Yep.
And I'm building my home and I decide, I'd like to place it in this location. I don't have to, but I'd like to, but that's going to encroach on the buffer a little bit. So I'd like to modify the buffer and average it out. Okay. Now, would I be allowed to do that if I could show that there wouldn't be any adverse impact and that the buffer function is going to be increased? I mean, I don't have to, I'm just choosing to. Could I get buffer averaging in that circumstance?
Not if you can meet the buffer.
Really?
If you can demonstrate that you can meet the buffer, then in a single family situation, those rules are different. But you know, but due to size, shape, topography, if there's some reason that you need to ask for buffer averaging, you know, that review is, you know, part of the wetland report that we would require to demonstrate that it's the minimum necessary. It's, you know, that the impacts are necessary for you to get onto the property, for instance. It's not a standard buffer reduction for, you know, for you to build a shop on your flat piece of property because you always wanted a shop and desired a shop. That a shop is not a necessary element of, you know, of a development. In this particular case, you have to have a road that's going into the property. It has to meet water, you know, the water quality components. The roadway also has to have sidewalks. You have to have all these elements that were agreed upon in the past, and that these things are the minimum necessary. And if there's situations where there are slopes that need to be, you know, filled in order to make them less steep, and then those areas then are replanted, that's a criteria in that mitigation report that we review. So that if that helps, I don't know. But typically, though, it's the criteria of the minimum necessary.
So if me wanting to build a shed on my property, encroaching on the buffer, not necessary because it's just something I want, right? Mm-hmm. Taylor Morrison wanting to build 300 homes, that's necessary. That's not just something they want.
It's part of their vesting.
Last question. Land use decisions, section sub E, they're building a road where there is no road now. They're building homes where there are no homes now. Is it your position that there will not be a change in land use or density with this decision?
They're not changing density. It's the same number of homes. It's all about its vested application.
I see. Okay. Thank you so much. I have no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Telligan. Okay. So I'm going to do a quick check with everybody. It's just about 1 o'clock. I know that Mr. Heacock is on the applicant's list. I don't know if the applicant wants to examine Mr. Heacock out of order, recall him at another point. I suppose at this point I can ask the county and the applicant if they want to cross-examine Mr. Heacock, and if so, how long those questions could be expected to take, or see if everybody is ready for a break and we come back in an hour. I'm just trying to, you know, plan out for the rest of the day here. And also note that after the lunch hour, we'll have to take a break about an hour and a half in so that we can catch up on the recording. So I put that out there to everybody else to see if,
my preference would be to recall Mr. Heacock later. Right. We have some witnesses I'm worried about whether I might get to today. So thank you.
Okay, you bet. Thank you. Mr. Get, I'm going to
hammer. There's an invisible H in there, so it's hard.
Getches. Got it. Okay. Do you have any questions for Mr.
That works for me. Or, you know, there's a few I could ask now if we have the flexibility to recall later. Or hold off and recall later. Either way works for me.
Well, you have the flexibility by me to recall later. The question is whether you want to ask him a few follow-up questions right now, or if we go ahead and take a 1 hour lunch break at this point, or less. It's up to you all.
Right. I could probably ask one or two questions that'll only take less than 5 minutes.
Great. Are you okay with that, Mr. Heacock?
Sure. Yeah, you bet.
Alston, are you okay with that? All right, let's go.
So, Mr. Heacock, regarding the declaration that you signed that was attached to applicant's response to appellant's summary judgment motion, Was everything, did you have a chance to read all of that before you signed it?
Yeah, I did, yes.
Was everything in there true?
Yeah.
Would you sign anything, any declaration that contained statements in there that you did not agree with?
No, I would not sign.
Or that you did not think were true?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. And in the past, have other attorneys in preparation for proceedings sent you draft declarations?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty common.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Also, one question regarding, I want to show you, if I can share my screen, then we can go to an exhibit. Let's see. Your screen. Can you see this right here?
Yeah.
Let's go up and see which one we're looking at. This is the current critical areas ordinance, 19700710 wetland delineation report. Yeah. Who writes that report? Who wrote it in this case?
ELS wrote the wetland report.
Not you, right?
No, I did not write that.
Okay. But in any event, if we scroll down on this and go to where is it? It's B.
Oh, yeah, B. You know, in relation to
part of it's being covered up by my. By my Zoom screen, just
right.
I'm looking at the part where hang on 1 second. Okay, we go to 7:15.
Oh, 7:15.
Wetland mitigation report.
Sure.
And wetland mitigation report is that was ELS as well. That
yeah, correct.
Okay, yep. We get on to B, and then we get on to six. And can you see this whole thing? Because mine's covered up partially.
Oh, right.
Where it's talking about temporary impacts that are considered. And is that what you were trying to think of when he was asking you about temporary impacts, buffers?
Yes.
Yes,
that's right. That's helpful. Right. Yes.
Right. Yeah, so the impacts, like if you have to grade a road and you temporarily impact the buffer, but you're planning to totally restore it afterwards. Yeah.
Yes.
That's what that is. But then if we look at, let me look at the code that existed at the time.
Uh-huh.
This one. So this is the 19700. So this is exhibit F8.
Yeah, and, right.
I can't see the PDF page on our exhibit list because it's covered up. I wonder if I can move this thing.
Oh, you should be able to.
It's 578. So here it doesn't have the word temporary, but it does have, so for example, description of the mitigation area, description of impact avoidance and minimization measures, description of unavoidable impacts, wetland impacts and mitigation measures.
Yeah.
When this code was in place, you were still here with the county, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so this has
always been the county's practice to consider temporary impacts as well.
Yes.
Okay. Did you read the preliminary plat approval in this case, which I believe is, which one is the preliminary? I think that's F10, which starts on page 811. So let me go up to F10. Yeah, F10. So preliminary minor plat amendment.
Yeah, right.
And is that something you reviewed as well?
Well, yeah. And, you know, I reviewed with Mr. Smith that particular report, and we both reviewed that together.
Hang on a second.
And that was from, I think that was from 2000 or maybe 2001, I think, when that report came out, I believe.
Okay.
The minor plat amendment.
Yeah, and on that one, do you remember if that one Hang on one second. Directed the CABR to address the wildlife corridor issues.
Yep. Yes.
And mitigation.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have anything else for now. I don't want to hold up. The break has been a long okay. stint here.
Yeah. May I change my mind and just ask one question and then be able to still bring Mr. Heacock back on redirect? Is that all right?
Sure. Yes.
Mr. Heacock, I just want to ask you one question about the categorical exemption that you included in the staff report.
Yeah.
You made reference to the WAC, but I believe there's also been reference to King County Code, Kitsap County Code 1804.
As 1804, being, right.
Yeah, apologize for the slip there. And that chapter is your CEPA regulations, correct?
Yes.
I'd like to ask you about 18.04.110, which concerns the use of categorical exemptions. And I can share that on my screen here just for your reference, because it's probably not right in front of you.
It is not in front of me.
Well, I have shared on my screen and I can make it bigger if that's helpful.
I can see that.
Okay, great. Can you please read subsection A? Is that font big enough for you?
Okay, yeah, I can read that. 1804.110A. Each department within the county that receives an application for a license, or in the case of governmental proposals, the department initiating the proposal shall determine whether the license and or the proposal is exempt. Department's determination that a proposal is exempt shall be final and not subject to administrative review. If a proposal is exempt, none of the procedural requirements of this chapter apply to the proposal. The county shall not require completion of an environmental checklist for an exempt proposal.
Great, thank you. Based on your knowledge, is the county's determination that a proposal is exempt from CEPA review subject to administrative appeal?
Right, yeah.
So is it subject to administrative appeal, your determination that a proposal is categorically exempt under this provision? Well,
there is no administrative appeal on that matter.
Great, thank you. No further questions at this time.
Okay, thank you. I think I will quickly ask Mr. Telligan if he has any redirect since he called this witness. And then if not, we can break for lunch.
No questions. Thank you.
All right. Okay, everyone. It's almost 10 after 1. I am happy to return at 2 p.m. or give everybody a full hour. What is everybody's thought here?
2 p.m. is fine for us.
2 p.m. Okay, great.
That's fine with me.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. We will reconvene at 2 p.m. I will also state at the outset at 3:30, I'm going to call a break wherever we are so that we can play catch up and then we can discuss end of the day and tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, everybody.